Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This is it. The time has come.
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
Push him down.
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night.
With Adam Catterall and Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that.
On Talk Sport.
Welcome to the Fight Night podcast from TalkSport. I'm Adam Catterall. Pleasure as always to be in your company. Bit of housekeeping before we get stuck into today's show. Please subscribe to us via iTunes or via the TalkSport website if you need an Android feed. We're always there providing top quality fight sports content. Now we've got a stellar guest list coming up in a minute, including Chris Eubank Jr., Terence Crawford, Sean Porter. They're coming up shortly. However, what you need to have at the start of the show is our reaction to the action that was going on in Sheffield on Saturday night. We were doing our show live. We had the monitors on. We were watching everything that was happening in the Terry Harper, Alicia Baumgardner fight and the Kiko Martinez and Kid Galahad fight. This is how it sounded on the radio as we were getting a little bit excited.
Ah! He's again! He's nailed!
Right, that was the live action from Saturday night. Time to look ahead to fights that are coming up in the not-too-distant future. You will have seen that last week they announced that Chris Eubank Jr. is off to Cardiff. Not on his holidays. He's got a fight on his hands against the fellow Welshman in Liam Williams. It's a proper domestic dust-up which could have major ramifications for the 160-pound division. Chris joined us on the show on Saturday to discuss.
Yo.
Please welcome the next gen, Chris Eubank Jr.
And a terrific uppercut as well. This needs to be stopped.
Kicked up with a jab, and Ronald Quillen is beginning to wilt. Eubank looking for uppercut. Eubank in complete control and on the rampage.
Eubank stopping the forward advance of Yildirim, and he's finding holes in that guard. Yildirim being forced backwards, and a thunderous left hook sends into the canvas, and it's been waved off immediately.
There is a more weary look now about Vanek Avdijan.
I think he may pull out on this one, Andy. He was under severe pressure then.
And he waves it off. Chris, that Eubank,
I just flew back from Dubai, so yeah, it's a little time difference. But yeah, I was out there training, having a little bit of break after my last fight, but now we're back in a full training camp, getting ready for December 11th.
Absolutely. And December, mate, has got everybody salivating. It's a proper fight. We're all extremely excited about it. And one thing that always makes me smile with you is that you are not frightened of taking on anybody in any particular place. And to go to a Welshman's back garden in Cardiff in December, I've got a funny feeling you get off on stuff like this, mate. I think you kind of like going into dens like this, don't you?
I wouldn't say I get off on it, but you know, I have no problem at all being the bad guy. You know, I've been booed into arenas many times before. And it doesn't really affect me. If anything, I can actually use that energy and turn it into something that makes me fight even harder, which is, you know, a skill I just have naturally. A lot of guys, you know, they get deflated when the crowd's not with them, or you know, if they're hearing the boos, or you know, the crowd isn't behind them. For me, you know, if I'm the bad guy, then I'll be the bad guy. It's okay as long as I get the job done.
The ramifications of the fight are obvious for everybody because there's a marker there for you, isn't there? Liam's recently been in with Demetrius Andrade, who's the WBO champion at this weight division, and he went the distance. If you go in there and look impressive and do something that Andrade couldn't do, then the noise is quite simple. Chris Eubank Jr. fights for a world title in 2022.
Absolutely. You know, this is a great domestic fight. It's a fight that the fans have been asking for a while now. And yeah, this will set up some big, big fights in 2022. But this itself is a big, big fight. You know, this is going to start. You know, tickets are already flying off the shelves, and a lot of people are really excited about this, including myself. You know, he fully believes he can go out there and beat me, and you know, I know what I'm going to do to this guy. So it's going to be great for the fans to see.
Evening, Chris. It's great to have you on as always. What I like about this fight and what was exciting about it while it was being made and the T's were being crossed and the I's dotted was that we always say that styles make fights in boxing. And I've got to say, when I see the silhouettes, when we think about the silhouettes of you both moving, this fight is brilliant in terms of styles.
I mean, you can't really get much more of a, you know, an aesthetically pleasing matchup, you know, two fighters that we go to war, we get it done, and you know, we both got heart, we both got a lot of output, and we're afraid to take risks. You know, some guys are afraid to take risks. You know, you look at all these guys getting in the ring with Canelo. You know, they don't want to take risks, they want to survive. This is not one of those fights. We're both going to go out there and we're going to let their hands fly.
Do you feel with him, what you're suggesting is that because Liam is a come-forward fighter, I mean, we saw it against Demetrius Andrade, he doesn't go for, I'd be very surprised. I know we have to expect the unexpected in boxing, but I'd be very surprised if he sat on the back foot. Does it suit you, someone coming forward and at you?
Does it suit me? I mean, you know, I can deal with each and every situation that's put in front of me. I enjoy a firefight. I'm not going to lie. But, you know, if a guy wants to box and move, you know, that then it actually makes it easier for me because it's less energy. I'm throwing less punches if a guy's running the whole time. But, yeah, I mean, Williams is not that type of guy as far as I've seen. So yeah, I expect him to come out there and do what he did with Andrade. They try and hunt me down, you know. And you know, I will decide, you know, after the first few rounds, I will know what the best tactic is to deal with him. You know, I'll throw the shots, I'll see what lands, I'll see what doesn't, I'll see how he moves, and you know, I'll either blast him out of there or I'll box his head off, you know. You guys will have to wait and see which one of my strategies I go with on the night.
Before we continue talking about fighting, Chris, I just want to bring up Newcastle, obviously the last time out, because me and Gareth were very, very fortunate to be welcomed along by the boxer people for a few drinks after the show and what have you. And we were amazed to see the one and only Mr. Roy Jones Jr. spitting bars, I think they call it, the young people, in a Newcastle nightclub where it was just absolutely going off. Did that take you by surprise, or is that just a regular occurrence when you two are training that he gets on the microphone and shows you what it's all about?
No, it didn't take me by surprise at all. Roy is, you know, he's a full-time entertainer in and out of the ring. He loves his rap. You know, we train in Pensacola at his gym, at his farm. We train to his music all the time. We shadow box into the rhythm of the beats of his songs. And, you know, he actually released a single like a couple of months ago, you know, still at his age, you know, and it's actually pretty good. You know, it's a good song. So yeah, you know, being in the club with him after the fight, celebrating and having him rap, you know, it was beautiful to see.
He didn't need persuading, did he? As soon as that microphone came over, he was on it, man. He was enjoying himself.
Great in there. Loved it.
Going back to the point about playing the heel, you know, it's going to be a raucous atmosphere up there in Wales. There's going to be massive support for Liam Williams. Does something special come out from you, Chris, when you know you're going to go up there with your back against the wall? Because you can go in there, presumably, You're the kind of person that can go into an arena and be booed in, but be carried out on people's shoulders by winning them over.
You know, and that's what's happened to me so many times in my career. You know, against me when I come into the ring, and then, you know, they're cheering. The same guys that are shouting and calling me these names and trying to spit at me and doing all this stuff, you know, they're the same guys that on the way out of the ring are asking me for a picture. It's absolutely nuts. I've seen it happen so many times. And I don't see this fight being any different. Yes, he's going to have the home crowd advantage. You know, everyone's going to be behind him. You know, I'll have my people up there, obviously, but, you know, I am guessing that it's going to be, you know, it's going to be mostly his fans there. And that's fine. You know, it's not about fans. Once that bell goes, the fans aren't going to hurt. They're not going to help him. They're not going to save him. They're not going to affect the fight. Not on my part anyway. I can't wait to get in there.
Mm. Chris, I know that your focus is fully on Liam Williams, but it's not to get my attention or the fans' attention that your schedules are now kind of aligning with Gennady Golovkin, who is fighting a couple of weeks after you against Murata over in Japan. That's obviously a fight that you would 100% say yes to next year. Is that still the dream fight for 2022, you against Triple G?
It has to be. You know, who else is he going to fight? And, you know, in terms of the WBA, I was interim champion. So if he gets that belt, then, you know, they have to make that fight. Who else do you guys want to see fight GGG in the middleweight division, you know? And yeah, the schedule is aligned. You know, we both fight in December. We can take a break over the New Year's and get it on early next year. You know, it's perfect. So we're going to be pushing heavily for that after a dispatch of Williams.
Well, Chris, where does that fight take place for you? Is that a UK fight? Is it a USA fight? Is it a New York fight? Where does it take place for you, if you can kind of envisage that?
I mean, you know, listen, that's the type of fight that will sell anywhere around the world. A dream of mine has always been to fight at the Amex in Brighton, and that would be amazing if we could somehow get it there. But whether it's in London, whether it's in, you know, in Vegas at the MGM or T-Mobile Arena, the Madison Square Garden in New York, I don't know. It's a huge fight. And it will be in a huge venue for sure.
Chris, just before we let you go, obviously there's a fight going on this evening in your division between Jaime Munguia and Gabe Rosado. Are you keeping across that, or is that not on your radar because you're concentrating on your own thing and then obviously moving towards the super fight with Triple G? Or do you keep an eye on those guys that are bubbling around the top contenders?
Is that's middleweight or super middleweight?
It's in the middleweight division that this evening, mate.
Oh, I didn't even know. I'm glad you told me. I will watch that. You know, any top middleweight fights, I always keep an eye on. And those are guys that, you know, I could very easily match up against in the future. So, I'll be watching.
Now, a man that's been calling for Chris Eubank Jr. to fight him is Zach Parker. He's up at super middleweight. And last weekend, he took care of Marcus Morrison in good fashion. It is likely now that he could be on the verge of a fight with Canelo. Random, this boxing game. Zach joined us on the show on Saturday to talk about, first of all, last weekend's performance.
That's what I come into box for, to provide these good fights for the fans, and obviously knockouts is what everyone wants to see. And I think I got a good one, obviously, against Marcus. Obviously, never been stopped being there with some good guys like Chris Eubank and that. And I just wanted to make a statement to say I'm meant to be at like the world level, top level, and there's levels to this game. And I think I showed it on the weekend.
Absolutely, mate. In front of the fans as well. We'll talk about that. And obviously topping the bill now on BT Sport and Queensbury Cards, which is exciting. In the immediate aftermath, we're on the microphone and we're mentioning various people's names. And rightfully so. Because we're now number one. Well, we've been number one with the WBO for some time. We're going to talk about the story about getting there right now. That interview that you did after your fight obviously took place before Canelo and Caleb Plant. Want to get your thoughts on that fight because it's a fight that has direct ramifications on your career. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I thought it was a good fight. Obviously, Canelo is Canelo, and he did what he had to do. He got got a really good win, stoppage win against like another good fighter in Sarah Plant. I think Sarah Plant gave a bit too much room to him. That's what I was, when I was watching it, I was thinking he went straight back to the ropes really, really quick. And I don't think you should be doing that against like someone like Canelo. You need to stay in the middle of the ring so you've got to, you got a little bit of space to move around, you know what I mean? But it's hard doing it when you're in there with the best pound for pound. And Canelo showed his level, didn't he?
Absolutely, man. And now, obviously, he's the undisputed super middleweight champion. He's the holder of that WBO belt. You're number one there. So, therefore, and you're in a good position because WBO and IBF, I would say, out of the four sanctioning bodies, are pretty strict with their mandatories. They do call them. They don't mess about with him and let things dwindle on. So, therefore, I would imagine that call's going to come quite shortly. But what do you think he's going to do? What's your gut instinct? Do you think he will defend or do you think he will vacate?
I think he'll be vacating. He wants like the massive fights, wants the big names. Like obviously you got like Bibchev and up at like Evie, and obviously the Golovkin rematch is still there. So he wants to make history and do all these like amazing things. But I'm still waiting for my chance. And obviously if he wants to put up against me and defend it, I'm ready and willing to do so. And but if not, there's some other big fights out there. If he wants to vacate and go for another weight class like Evers, I'm willing to put it up there with the number two, and that's Danny Jacobs. And there's some good, really good fights in WBO rankings. Danny Jacobs, David Lemieux.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just want these massive fights now. Obviously, I was inactive for like 2 or 3 years, and now I'm with Frank and that BT. I'm knocking on the door now, and I'm like to say, a happy fight is a hard fight to beat, and that's what I feel like at the minute.
Yeah, I think the majority of fans would guess that, listen, you can never second guess what Canelo's going to do, but you would guess that he would vacate and step up, and that would open the door for you and Danny Jacobs, who is, you're the number one, he's the number two, which makes perfect sense. If he doesn't want to do that, then like you just mentioned there, David Lemieux is the number three as well. What do you make of this? Because I was reading something today in one of the newspapers that you can get on the Tube, and it's a column done by Ricky Hatton. And he was asked to tip three fighters who he thinks from Great Britain who could become world champion in 2022. He tipped Joe Joyce, he tipped Lyndon Arthur, and he tipped a certain Mr. Zach Parker. How does that make you feel when Ricky Hatton's saying things like that, mate?
That's amazing. Obviously, Rick Hatton, one of the legends of British boxing sport, and who I watched from growing up. I was heartbroken when he lost to Floyd Mayweather back in the day. Obviously, stayed up with all my family to watch it. We all supported him, and things like that give me a massive boost in boxing. These massive names, what are, from the past, are taking notice of me, and I'm really grateful for it, and it shows I'm doing something right, doesn't it?
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely, it does. I know that you've been vocal about Chris Eubank Jr. That's another fight that I think a lot of fans have been salivating over, but he's got himself a dance partner in the weight category below you. He's staying at middleweight, it seems, my man. He doesn't fancy 168, but he's having a dance with Liam Williams. What did you make of that when that was made?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really good fight. Both going to bring it, both action, always in action-packed fights, and it's a really hard fight for Chris Eubank. Liam Williams is a really good fighter, and it's a pick and fight, isn't it? Depends who turns up on the night, and I think I'm going to go with Liam Williams. He's on a roll at the minute. It just came off a really good fight with Andre. So yeah, that's what I reckon. He'll probably nick it.
And it's in Cardiff as well, obviously. Liam Williams is his stomping ground too, man.
In his hometown, and it gives people that buzz, that little bit extra when all your fans are there cheering. And you see what Eubank's like when he's in like a hostile place. He brings it as well. So it's whoever feeds off the crowd, doesn't it?
Mate, yeah, absolutely. And who knows? Maybe those boys will fancy a dance at 168 in the not-too-distant future with someone like yourself, and we can get it all.
That's what we're hoping for. That's what we're aiming for, like. We just want these massive fights now so we can put my name up there with like the likes of Canelo and that. Obviously, I'm number one with him, but he wants the bigger names, and that's what I'm trying to get, these bigger names. And you can do that by facing these top fighters, and they just need to put it up now, because I'm ready to go.
How are you enjoying the spotlight more? Because there's a lot of fighters that sign with promoters and television channels, and they're there straight away, and they're kind of learning on the job right in front of our eyes. I kind of like your route, mate. I like the way that you've done it where it's been a little bit more local, a little bit more small hall, building up. I mean, you were 19, I think you were 19 and all before you signed with Frank and started topping stuff with BT. How are you enjoying now the eyes being on the work that you're doing?
That's it. That's what you're in box for. You want to be center attention, don't you? Obviously, I come up the hard way, like small old shows, and then went with Science for a little bit. And then we parted ways. Now with Frank, that's where this last year has like been 10 times better, maybe 20 times better than what anyone's done for me in the past, like with promotional deals and stuff like that. They've been putting me out there every week. And even off my mates been saying, there was like, oh, I can't believe how much you're getting put out all the time. I was like, I'm the main man now. You know, it's.
but you've got to take credit for that as well, because you've earned that. Like you say, you've done the small hall circuit. You've paid your dues. You've worked hard. You've got yourself into a situation. And I think a lot more fighters need to do that route, you know, because then when they get to the opportunities that are now coming your way, you appreciate them more, and you actually work harder in that moment and make them count.
That's what I said. Obviously, coming from small shows, I effing's a bonus for me. Don't matter. Like, I love every single fight that I go into now, because it's like I've come from nothing, and it shows that anyone can do it. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I'm really appreciative of Frank and BT really getting behind me, and it's only the start.
I've seen you recently as well being paraded round Derby's home football matches, my man. I know that you're a big Derby boy. We'll talk about football in a minute. I know that might depress a few people talking about Derby County at the moment, but we'll get stuck into that in a minute. But there is a real prospect that you could actually end up fighting in that stadium at some point. I mean, Frank's got a track record, especially with the WBO. He's got a track record of doing things right and getting the top names. Yeah. You've mentioned the Danny Jacobs and the David Lemieux. If it's not going to be Canelo, to come to the UK, to put it on in Derby. I mean, that's what you dreamt of when you were a little lad, weren't it?
It's crazy, like, just speaking about it, like even now, I go down, watch football all the time, like down Derby, and just imagine me, I sit there like in my spot, in my seat, and just imagine like what it'd be like with a big boxing crowd, and it'd be amazing, and it'd be a dream come true. Obviously, now with Frank, they're the people to do it. You've seen, you've done it with like Warrington, Ricky Hatton, Joe Calzaghe, you've done it with all the top guys, and hopefully Zach Park will be next one to do it.
Is America on the bucket list as well at some point, mate?
That's another one I want to do. You see, like, obviously Danny Jacobs is number two. I wouldn't be bothered to go over to Madison Square Garden and face him in New York in his back garden. I know what I can do in boxing. These massive fights, especially in Madison Square Garden, it's such a historic place for boxing. These are sort of nights what I've been thriving for, and now I'm just coming to my A game. I think this is time to do it.
I think one thing as well to stress with people that watch you, you're putting people over, right? And we saw with Marcus last weekend, you're putting people over, but it's not reckless power. It's not like you're just wazzing it around and it's just catching somebody. There's a lot of thought going into that. Do you think you're getting enough credit at the moment as a boxer? Because a lot of people refer to you as the power guy. Do you think you get enough credit as a bit of a technician? Because there's a bit of precision that is going into your work as well. And I think that is actually the reason why you're putting a lot of guys over too.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I think someone said. I've got something about power. I said, well, it ain't just that. It's like the way I set up. I'm like awkward, orthodox, southpaw. And then it's all about the feints, and then when you catch them, you don't see it coming. That's why they get put over. It ain't just because I've got that much. I'm too much bigger than them. Now just knock them over for anything. It's all set up by these little tricks. And yeah, I feel like these last couple of fights, obviously deciding power because I've knocked them out and that. But
yeah,
I'm still waiting to show what I'm all about, especially on BT. They ain't seen enough of me yet, especially because it's. Like every fight's gone a bit quick and that, but hopefully they'll see a bit more boxing from me. I was a good amateur back in the day. I won 4 or 5 national championships, Boxer England and that. So yeah, got a little bit of pedigree behind me as well.
You don't have to tell me that, mate. I know. But you,
that's it. Just letting everyone else know.
Yeah, but the thing is, when you burst onto the scene, and it kind of feels like that, because obviously I think you only signed with Frank in March. There's been a couple of, like your mates have said, you're everywhere now. Everybody's talking about Zach Parker in this particular division, and every time you show up, you're putting people over. So therefore, it's nice just to paint a picture for fans. Listen, there's a bit of things that went on before all that. How are you, I said, how are you dealing with the spotlight, obviously walking down the street and getting recognised and all that type of carry on? What's it like fighting in front of that amount of people?
It's mint now, because obviously the last two fights have been like, one was behind closed doors, and then I think I had more pressure on me that one behind closed doors, because it was the first fight with Frank, and then the week of fight said, no, you're being put up to top of the bill. Yeah, I was like, oh my God, I best perform. all eyes are on me. And I felt a bit more nervous for that one than I did my last one. So I love boxing in front of fans. You thrive off the fans, and especially that last fight, I had a mint atmosphere. It was a really good atmosphere.
It was good,
and everyone really got behind me. Even like all the Stoke fans from Nathanini's, like they all still got behind me. And it's amazing. I that's what I want, these massive fights in massive arenas, and I think it's only around the corner now.
Mm. Come on, we're going to have to finish on a bit of football, mate. I know that it's a touch depressing, your side. I mean, what's the crack? How many points deductions are you going to go through this season? What's going on?
I feel like Rooney's doing quite all right job for us. Obviously, we got points deducted, went into administration, but I think we've only lost like one or two since that. And we're only like, I think it's like 3 or 4 points behind there. One's in front of us. If we didn't have them points deducted, we'd be close to the playoffs. So he ain't been doing too bad of a job, but still like a long season ahead, and we need to get some buys in place, especially before the Christmas, when the transfer window opens up, because that's when they'll sell all the players, because obviously we're in debt and that. But listen, it'd be amazing if we just stay up, and then we'll get around it all around next year. So hopefully we'll stay up and we'll do that.
It would be an amazing achievement if you stayed up, given the situation. The people of Derby need a sporting star to celebrate. That's what they need, my man. And you're the guy.
That's it.
You're
I'm
the guy. We need to put on some events for them to go and get excited about.
Definitely, mate. Definitely.
What's this period now like? Because you've got to the point, 22-0. You've served your dues, mate. You're there. You're ready to rock and roll. You know what's going to happen. The WBO are going to call this at some point. It's a bit of a waiting game now, isn't it? How do you look after yourself in this situation? Can you ease off for Christmas? Do you take over? What do you do?
I've been told to have a good Christmas, enjoy myself and that. And we're trying to get the next fight will probably be like March time. That's what they said. But I've said to everyone, I'm not waiting around for these like Canelo fights or anything. I just want to stay busy. I'm 27 now, so I'm coming into my prime, and I just want to stay busy and keep showing everyone what I'm about. You only get these massive fights if you're looking good in every fight, and that's what I want to keep doing. And hopefully we'll get that world title get soon.
Where's the celebrations happening this weekend, mate? I know that you're out with your pals.
Yeah. Going to races tomorrow, so I'll have a couple of beers there.
Why not, mate? Why not? You've earned it, mate. You've earned it.
I've got my fresh trip, so I've got to do something about it.
You've got to let them know, man. Now then, let's look ahead to next weekend. We've been crying out for a super fight at welterweight for a long, long time. I think we've got one. The WBO champion, Terence Crawford, is defending against Sean Porter. Both men were on the show on Saturday. We'll start with the champ. Here's Terence.
Have mercy on my soul. Don't let my heart turn cold. Have mercy on many men.
Not backing down. He's bringing the fight to Sean Porter. Sean Porter's the bigger fighter. Sean Porter's the bigger name.
Porter Express. Stylistically, that's good for Porter, but that was a devastating right hand to the body. Terrific right hand. And here comes the referee.
Oh!
Crawford versus Porter, November 20th in Las Vegas.
This is more than a test for Terrence Crawford. This is his livelihood is on the line, and everything that he's about is on the line.
It's just my time right now, and I truly feel like it's my time to shine. I will shine November 20th.
I wasn't looking to fight Sean Porter when I stepped up in the welterweight division, but you know, being that he's one of the top welterweights in the world. You know, here we are, and I'm looking forward to it.
Do you think Sean Porter opens the door or does he shut the gate, given in your head the type of performance that you're going to put in, when I'm talking about the prospect of fighting the other top welterweights that are out there right now?
I don't know. We shall see. You know, I hope for the best.
Is he your most significant challenge, do you think, up to this point in your career?
I don't know. You know, I've faced them great champions in my career at the point of time that I faced them at. This is just one of the big challenges that I've been yet to face, and that being that this is a top PBC fighter. So everybody always want to see how I fared against PBC top fighters, you know, being that this is one of them, you know, we're here now.
I like the calmness about you, my man. Do you, again, we spoke about this in the past, regarding credit from fans and pundits, and you've just mentioned there's always that, well, he's got to fight the guys from PBC and what have you. Do you think you get a little bit of an unfair shake when it comes to the credit that should be awarded to the guys in this division?
Of course. You know, I feel like I get a lot of unfair, you know, a lot of things being that they had all the welterweights on their side, you know, and they was fighting each other and I wasn't able to fight none of them. And, you know, a lot of people criticize me for not being able to get certain fights made when it wasn't in my power to even get those fights made. All I can do is ask for them and call for them. But, you know, that's water under the bridge now. And me and Sean Porter is fighting. And, you know, hopefully this is the beginning of a bright future.
How has recent times and disappointments affected you? Because we all thought that we were heading towards a Manny Pacquiao fight. I mean, we've been thinking about that for you, Terrence, haven't we? Since 2015, we've probably had about 10 conversations about it since. Sure. Now, obviously, he's retired. Is there a disappointment surrounding that situation?
Of course. You know, I was very disappointed that I wasn't able to land that fight when it was right in front of me. And you know, it was a little bittersweet, but at the same time, everything happened for a reason. And, you know, I believe everything is already written. And, you know, it wasn't written for me and him to fight.
The other two top guys that you've been heavily linked with, originally Keith Thurman, you were probably the only one that was calling for that fight when Keith Thurman was the number one in the welterweight division. And since that, obviously, Errol Spence. What did you make of Errol when asked about a possible fight with you in the future? And he started talking about purse splits straight away and referring to it being an 80-20 or a 70-30 in his favor.
Well, you know, that just tells it all right there. You know, those guys wasn't too excited to get in the ring with me like I was excited to get in the ring with them. You know, I was calling out the top welterweights before I was even a welterweight. You know, they was all telling me I needed to get a belt. I wasn't a real welterweight yet, and this wasn't my weight class and whatnot. And after I fought Jeff Horn, I got my belt, and I'm like, okay, so I got something to offer now. So fights didn't happen, so. You know, that's the past, though. That's history. You know, we here now, and, you know, I'm going to show the world why I'm the best fighter in the world.
Do you think a fight with Errol Spence will ever happen? Because you seem to have concluded, listen, he doesn't want to dance.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so.
Who is, obviously, you're the current main man at 147. Where do you see the future of this division when you're looking at the likes of Jaron Ennis and Virgil Ortiz? Who do you look at there, those young 20-odd-year-olds that are coming through that would dominate this division in years to come?
Well, I ain't no psychic, you know, and this sport is boxing, so any given day, you know, somebody can get hit with the wrong shot and, you know, it's over with. But, you know, the future is bright for all these up-and-coming young fighters. You know, they all getting to the point where, you know, if they don't have a title, you know, they're campaigning for a title. So, you know, the new generation is the bigger threat now. Like when I was young and I was the new generation, I was a big threat to those that was in front of me as well.
I'm sure you've been asked this many times this week, my friend. It's well documented that it's the last one on your top rank deal. And there's been frustrations in the past regarding fights and various things that that might not have materialized. Is the best route for Terence Crawford, given the star that you are and the talent that you are, is the best route to try free agency and go down the Canelo route and therefore pitch those fights to the highest bidder?
I don't know. We shall see.
I'll wait till after this fight then, my man. Regarding weights, because you've gone through 135, you've gone through 140, undisputed there. Now we're at 147, obviously chasing greatness here as well. Would you contemplate 154 if you can't get the right fights for yourself at 147?
For sure.
Is there anything up there that attracts you? Is there anything that you're interested in up there?
A title.
Listen, there's some nice fights up there if you wanted to go up, my man, you know? Perfect. Someone like you and a Charlo would be quite fun.
Real fun.
I love the way that you answer my question. Just finally, you may have seen a couple of your old adversaries. It's hotly rumoured that they are going to fight each other. Kell Brook has said that he signed part of his deal for a fight with Amir Khan. I know that Amir's been spending a bit of time with yourself in camp. What do you make of that? I know that maybe it's a few years past its sell-by date, but what do you make of that fight?
I still think it's a great fight. You know, Kell Brook is still, you know, talented as ever, and so is Amir Khan. I just feel like, you know, at this point of time in their careers, the best time for them to fight each other, you know, right now, while people still talking about them. And it's going to be a great fight when they fight.
Just on your November 20th date with Sean, obviously it's well documented, your friends. How easy is it just to park that friendship for a short period of time and go to war with someone that you're very familiar with?
Oh, real easy. Once we're in the ring, we ain't no friends. So there you have it.
That's what the champ's got to say. Let's hear from the challenger, the two-time welterweight champion, Sean Porter, who was also joined by his trainer and father, Kenny Porter, who's got a wicked story about Alexander Usyk. Check this out.
This particular level of fight is not going to be the norm. And the reason why is because this is kind of, it's far and few in between where you have two elite guys that are at the highlight of their careers that can get in the ring. Not to say that there aren't other guys who can unify divisions and things like that, but I just got a feeling that those other fighters who can and have the ability to unify, they'll be taking on lesser competition until, you know, they're kind of forced into the mega fight. In a lot of ways, Terence was forced into this mega fight. I don't think it took him very long to say, okay, but the fact that he said he had to say, okay, instead of saying yes or let's go, you know, or literally pointing me out, you know, that doesn't happen very often. So I think that it's important that it becomes the norm. But I got a feeling that it won't continue as elite as this is, but we'll start to see more elite competition getting in the ring against one another. And I think that it will improve the life that boxing has.
You're a bit of an anomaly in the modern game. You're the epitome of the anytime, anywhere, anyplace type of guy. You got an opportunity, obviously, on November the 20th to become a three-time world champion in the welterweight division. How much do you believe that your legacy is on the line with a fight like this?
You know what I do, and for very good reason. I think that when you take a look at the elite level of competition that I've been in the ring with and the results of those fights, even if you may have felt like I won those fights, I think that this is that next big one that it will make the difference of whether you say Sean Porter was a winner or you say Sean Porter was just a fighter in big fights, you know? So I don't want to be known as that fighter who was in big fights, but didn't pull it off, you know? So this is that next big one for me.
But this has always been the norm in your life. And if I can bring your father into the conversation as well, because throughout your amateur career, you were always taking on the best of the best. And I believe that recently he reminded you that you've got a victory over Alexander Usyk in those amateur times when you were competing at middleweight. Kenny, can you remember that particular fight from taking on the now unified heavyweight champion?
That particular fight, yes. Since we had previously, prior to fighting him, we had fought Danny Jacobs probably 3 or 4 times. We had beaten him. Since we had also competed against Sean Estrada, who would be the Olympian, who was over 6 feet tall also. And back then in the amateur system, they were giving us the scores in between rounds. Mm-hmm. And it was a close fight. And I think he was, you know, he was up a 2 to 3 points pretty much the first round and 2 to 3 points after the second round. And, you know, he was, you know, he's that kind of fighter. He was ahead of us in this. And I implored Sean going into that last round. I implored him. I just really pushed for him to really go at this guy in that last round. And in that last round, we were able to pull it out. He caught him with something that rocked him, actually kind of stopped the guy in his tracks. And then when he did that, it might have been a right hand. When he did that,
right hand.
When he did that, he jumped right on the guy. And I was like, yeah, you know, I really felt that we had pulled it off and we had a chance to win that fight at that point. And Sean kept pouring it on until the bell rang. So, yeah, I remember that like it was yesterday.
It's an amazing story. Obviously, that was when you were competing at middleweight, Sean. Obviously, now down at welterweight.
I got a better one for you if you got a second.
If you've got the time, Ken, I've got the time. Yeah, go for it.
I'm on my story kick because Sean was on his story kick. Years later, I take a team to Russia and to the Ukraine. My top fighter on that team that day was Errol Spence. How funny is that? So I take this team to the Ukraine. And when we get there, you know, Usyk at this point, he's a gold medalist. He's won a gold medal. And they have this big dinner for us. They brought in the Ukrainian team. And they talked about how the Ukrainian team had medaled and won so many medals and the most dominant team in the Olympics and all of these things like that. And I didn't have anyone on my team that day who had even been to a world tournament, who had been to a international competition of a note and won anything. I didn't have anyone. These guys didn't have any experience. Errol Spence didn't have any experience with it. And so I just felt that we had, you know, nothing to say, and that they were just going on and on about this great team. And they had Alexander up here and they were praising him. So I told the translator that they gave me, who was with me the whole time we were there for 2 weeks. I told him, I said, you tell them that my son beat him. And the translator is a young college kid. He said, I can't say that. You know, I can't say that. I said, no, you tell them that my son beat him. He said, I can't do that. So Alexander's standing up there and they're talking about him and, you know, he's taking pictures and everything. And I yell out, I said, my son beat him. Right. And the whole Ukrainian, everybody, you know, that was there, they laughed, you know, they laughed because they only know him as Olympic gold medalist. They don't know. Right. And they're laughing. And I said, I turned to the translator again. I said, tell him what I said. And so he said it, right? And they're laughing. And Alexander says, yes, his son beat me.
Fair play,
and
man.
The whole room went quiet.
Right? I like it. Sean, if I may just bring you back in for a second. Obviously, this fight coming up on November the 20th against Terence. As I look around the whole welterweight division, stylistically, are you the most capable to be able to beat Terence and hand him his first defeat in the professional game?
I do believe that I am. I think stylistically, I think that with Terence, there's got to be multiple strategies. There's got to be multiple techniques and styles. And there's not too many guys in the boxing world in general, especially not in the welterweight division, who have multiple styles. I think the welterweight division is that division that offers a level of speed that you get from the lighter weights and also a level of power that you get from the heavier weights, and which makes this fight even more interesting because it's like a situation where you never know when it's going to happen. But I think when you look around the rest of the division, nobody has that combination that I have of speed, quickness, and power and durability and experience, and the list goes on. And Terence hasn't seen that.
Is the approach, Sean, 12 mini fights rather than one whole fight to give 12 different looks throughout the course of the fight in a way?
I like that. I didn't look at it as 12 fights. I actually was looking at it more like three fights. but we'll see what happens.
Listen, how much confidence do you take going into the fight, knowing full well that you have a win on your ledger over the current and new WBA welterweight champion? And you've obviously been in there with Errol, the unified champion, a narrow split decision loss on that. But perception's everything, isn't it? A victory against Terence Crawford, and all of a sudden you become the man at 147 pounds.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. And for me, it's just the understanding that I've had every experience required to be in the ring on fight night against against Terence Crawford to get the job done.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Also next weekend, there's a bit of action coming to you live from Wembley here on Talk Sport. There's a British light heavyweight title on the line. Jose Burton is taking on this guy, Dan Azeez. And Dan Azeez joins us on the show.
Good shot. It was lovely chopping right hand. Beautiful. And he's hurt.
In comes the towel there from Mark Tibbs. He was caught there by Azeez.
Our goal is obviously to be the British champion. I want to clear up domestically. So yeah, Jose Burton, he's the one, man. And he was really like calling out my name. Sometimes you should be careful what you wish for.
Since I won the Southern Area, won the English, I've always said, look, the step is to try and get that British title, and I'm here fighting for it on a big platform against a very good boxer as well, because I think it's all good winning the Lonsdale belt, but for me, it's a lot about a legacy as well, and I think Jose Burton's a very good boxer. He's been at that stage already. I would class him probably fringe world level, and yeah, to beat him and be able to put my name down in the history books as a British champion, it's just it'll be amazing, man. So yeah,
it is. Listen, just on Jose, we'll talk him first because he's got two. He has got two defeats on his ledger. But if anybody's actually watched his career against Frank Buglione, he's winning that fight until he gets chinned in the last round.
Of course,
and fair enough against Jan Blachnik. We saw what Blachnik did over on these shows most recently. That's a tough fight for anybody.
He is a
very capable dude next week. But your styles, mate, I know Gareth absolutely loves when various styles just gel together and mesh together. You and him next week will be providing some serious fireworks for the fans that have paid for a ticket.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. You know what I mean? Like, as much as I, you know, want to get in there, win, and that's the main thing, but I also want to entertain. I want people to be excited when I'm fighting. And like you mentioned, our styles, I think, are perfect to make for a bonfire night. Like, he's nice, long and rangy, tall, and he can crack. And I'm, you know, the smaller, stockier lad that likes to get on the inside. And I've got a few, fair bit of knockout and on my resume as well, so I think it'll make for a good fight, man. I'm excited, man. I really am.
For someone like you though, Dan, I think you've been quite active in the COVID era, if you like, because I think you've had you've had three fights. I mean, we've been talking about this a lot on the show. There's a lot of fighters that haven't fought for a year.
Yeah, of course.
And yeah, so you've managed to keep oiled in that time. What I want to know is, are you using your degree at all in accounting and finance? Are you combining a career, climbing the ladder in boxing, with making money while you're accounting?
No, I'm focused full time on boxing, but the only time the accounting comes in use is when I got because I'm a professional boxer, I'm obviously self employed. So when I have to do my taxes and whatnot, I don't have to go and hire anybody. I could just do it myself. So that's one place it counts for and helps me out in. So yeah, but in terms of the actual profession, I'm solely just focused on boxing at the moment, and
We were talking earlier about the light heavyweight division in respect of, you know, what Canelo did last weekend against Caleb Plant, and, you know, he's considered universally as the number one pound for pound at the moment. Can I ask your opinion about Canelo stepping up to light heavyweight and what you think he does against A, Dimitri Bivol, B, Joe Smith Jr., and C, first of all, Artur Beterbiev?
Okay, the first two, Bivol and Smith. I think he beats both of them. Probably knocks out Bivol. Mike, because Adam, is it Smith? Yeah, Joe Smith. He's tough and rugged. And I actually have mates in America who know of him and whatnot, and they say he's a strong puncher and he's game. So I think he might give Canelo a bit more of a rough time. But I think Bivol's not really a big light heavy, so he won't have that advantage on Canelo. So I would, and Canelo can box, so I would say later on in the rounds, maybe Canelo would stop Bivol. And then for Beterbiev, I don't know. That one's an iffy one, because that Beterbiev guy is a monster, man. Punches like one, looks like one. It's just, I'm not too sure, and I don't know if Canelo would take that fight, but I would be really intrigued to see what would happen in that fight.
Can I just jump in for one more? And now there's one more question. In the WBA rankings, the number nine, does the number nine in the WBA rankings take an opportunity to fight for a world title? And it's called Dan Azeez, if he flattens Hosea Burton, would you just go to a world title if you were thrown into one, if you were picked?
Do you know what I would do? Because at the end of the day, is every boxer's dream, and you ask all the boxers, what's the goal, what's the aim? And it's always to be a world champion. You never know if you're ever going to get a shot. There's only a handful of boxers that actually become world champions. And if I get offered the opportunity, I'll take it with two hands, 100%, man. Like, funny you even mentioned that. When I first saw that, I was like, "What is this a mistake or something? Like, why? What am I doing in the rankings?" Like, but you know,
You're winning. That's what you're doing, Dan. You're winning. You're beating people.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? But I think I'm not even, to correct you, Graf, I think I'm even moved to number eight, you know.
You there might want to check.
Yeah, you might want to check. So, yeah, man, it's good. It's a good look. Like, I'm in there, Craig's in there, Buatsi's in there. We're all from the same kind of era. Like, we all three of us came up in the amateurs around the same time. We all live in South London. So, it's great to see, man. And it's good to... for the guys in our area looking at us to see us as an example, like, look, you know, this is so-and-so and whatnot. Look, they're in the world ranking. So it's a good look, man. I'm happy.
Dan, you just brought some up there that I just wanted to touch upon. Everybody talks about that world level and they'll bring up Baturbia, they'll bring up Bivol and all those guys, Josh Smith. But British domestic scene in light heavyweight, mate, we have got some lads...
Yeah.
That could genuinely make legacy fights for years to come. You've just 100%. Mentioned some of them there. You know, I mean, Callum Smith just comes to this weight division. Callum Johnson's in this weight division. You lads could do a bit of a round robin and create a bit of an era that like me as a kid growing up in the 90s that experienced the likes of Collins, Ben and Eubank when they were all going at it.
Exactly.
You could create something really special.
Exactly that. And it's a shame, man, because we're in like an era where it's a lot about ego, platforms, this, that, promoters. Like, there's so much talent in the light heavyweight scene from not like 1 to 10. We should all just mix it up and just have, like, a tear-up. And you know what I mean? I don't think anyone really and truly loses in that situation. Like, but it's hard to make a lot of these fights, like I said, because of promoters and stuff. But I would love to. I always say we should all just have a round robin. Everyone versus everyone. Like... It'll be so entertaining, and boxing in the UK is, I think, is thriving at the moment. Like it's the best it's probably been in a while. Like, you know, before we used to think you got to go to the US to like be a star and this, that. Now they're all coming down to our shores and stuff. So do you know what I mean? It will be a fantastic time, and I want to be in fights where people remember decades to come and whatnot. Like I still watch Ben versus Eubank. I still watch Eubank versus Watson, like, do you know what I mean? Win, lose or draw any of them. They're great fights and that's what I'm about. Legacy. Building that's the whole reason why I wanted to win the Southern, the English, British. I want to, you know, be part of history. And yeah, I'd love to do it if it can be done.
Well, yours gets underway next week against Ozea Burton, mate, for the British Light Heavyweight Championship. When that bell goes, what can the fans expect?
Yeah, fireworks, man. Fireworks. You know what? Do you know what it is? I Hosea is trying to be the, you know, a two-time British champion, which not a lot of people have done. And I'm trying to be like the first light heavy to have won all domestic titles in the light heavy. I don't think there's anyone that's done that. So if we both going into the fight with this mindset, no one's there to lose. So you can only expect fireworks and, you know, a good fight. So yeah, man, please tune in November 20th, Sky Sports. And I hope to give you lot a fantastic fight.
Now, if you're into your reality TV, you might be familiar with the guys from Geordie Shore. There's a young gentleman on there called Aaron Chalmers. Well, he was on there. He's then stepped into the world of mixed martial arts, did quite well performing on the Bellator stage. He's now stepping into the boxing ring and Gareth caught up with him for a chat.
Switching to the pro boxing game, but see with the MMA, I always have a regret of I never took it fully serious, Gareth. I would do an 8-week training camp. I would, because I won the first fight, I'd done an 8-week camp, won or lost, then I would go missing for 2-3 months on the drink, partying, then I would get another fight booked in and I would do the same again 8 weeks. So I was never any better from the first fight to the last fight, because I never continued so I would get in camp, it would take 6 weeks to get fit, then I would do 2 weeks of maybe technique, but I was never any better in any area because I never put the work in. And I always regret thinking, if I had done it properly, where would I have been? But in a way, I'll now look and think, it wasn't meant to be. It's pushed us into the direction of, I've done my pro license 2 weeks ago. So I've got to do my brain scanning, my medical again to get that. I've been down with Adam Booth for 14 months, consistent. The only time I've been home is when my baby was born and when I've been injured, not a few weeks ago. So it's been I've been through three of Mick Conlon's fights with him. Three of his camps, all of them, for 12 weeks at a time. So,
Do you spar with him?
We do body sparring because he's a lot smaller, but he's powerful. He's really powerful. But it's, you know what it is, it's a good mixture because we've got lads at the top of the game, your Josh Kellys, your Mick Conlins, and we've got all the way down to lads who are just having the first pro fight, amateurs. So it's a good mixture of people. And I think from when people see me last MMA fight, I was kind of sloppy. I was just a bit of a brawler to what I've been learning under Adam Booth in his gym. I think there's going to be a big surprise. And like I say now, when I have a fight, I'll not be going missing for 3 months because now I don't drink. So what I'll be doing is having a fight, maybe having a few slices of cheesecake, and then I'll be going back down the gym the same week because I've only got 2 or 3 years to do this because I'm 34 now. So if I'm going to do it, I want to do it properly and end on a high.
So just tell me about the obviously you fought as a pro MMA fighter. I know that you were a formidable kickboxer when you were younger as well. You're transferring your skills. How are you looking at the Jake Pauls and the Tommy Furies at this world, or are you looking, you know, to fight guys who are just starting in their career? Are you looking at celebrity YouTube fights, or what is it?
No. So I'll be honest with you. So I was asked this. So Adam sat down and he was like, do you want to go down the route of just the celebrity route? And I was like, no, because that's not fulfilling me being a professional boxer. So me fighting three people from Love Island and in this place and that place, I'm not going to in 3 years time be like, oh yeah, I was a pro boxer, because I wasn't. So I've decided to knock that on the head and go for the pro ranks and give it everything I've got. And I kind of know that once I get a couple of fights in, the doors will open for your Tommy and your Jake. But I'm not going to mention them too much because I haven't had a fight yet. But I know once I do the first fight, people will start get talking. It'll be aired on wherever it's aired, and that's when the doors will open.
Do you see those guys though, Tommy and Jake, and think, nah, I've got the bettering of them?
Yes. Do you know, I'm as you know, I'm always quite confident. But because I've been in the gym so consistent for so long, yes, I do believe I get the better of them. I know they're a lot bigger than me, but when I hear Tommy talking, when I've heard him in interviews, he's like, yeah, I've just done an 8-week camp. And it reminds us of the old me. So he does an 8-week camp, but then you see him smoking cigars in Tyson's after party and stuff, which is fair enough. His brother's champion of the world. But he reminds us of me doing an 8-week camp, and he never really seems to be getting better because he's just going back and forth to the 8-week camp. So I think if or when we fight, I think I have both their numbers, but it's early days for me, so I'm not going to say too much, but I'll let the boxing do the talking.
I've got to ask you, though, what do you think of Jake and Logan Paul?
I like them. I don't mind them. I think they clearly know what they're doing in the world of boxing because it's entertainment. They're not going to be world champions. They've come on the scene. Jake's fighting Tommy Fury. He's fought Tyron Woodley. Logan's fought Mayweather. So they're obviously doing something right. You know what I mean? So, I mean, if I can get a snippet, Tommy, Jake, and Logan, I'll retire and have a tremendous life because of them. So I'm not going to call them any name under the sun because they've kind of come from a similar background to me, and they're smashing it. So good luck to them.
What weight division do you fit into then?
Middleweight, 72. 72. I was going to go, so I fought in MMA at 77, 74, 73, and 70. I felt the best at 73. That's when I felt the fittest. And I feel like I was too small for 77.
Too small for 170 for
what? Yeah, for 7 months.
We had to drain too much for lightweight, yeah?
For lightweight, I kind of lost all power and stuff. So, but like I say, 72. And then obviously, if the Tommy and Jay comes in, I'll just go up to 79. But like now, because I've got such good strength and conditioning, people around us and everything. If we signed the fight for one of them at a heavier weight, I would have a full 12-week plan. So I wouldn't be draining myself. I'd be fully fueled and at a good nice weight.
You there's two things really. What drives you to do this? And also, I know that you sometimes talk about the kind of anxieties in life, and like you say, you've talked about drinking and kind of like getting out of it. How important is it for you to pass that on to other people? But also, what drives you to want to do this?
You know what drives us, right? What drives us is everyone telling me, ever since I was little, right? Ever since I was little, if someone tell me I couldn't do something, it's like it's something in my head, I think. I'm going to go and do it. Like, I remember when I was about, I think I was 14, and I was playing as a goalkeeper for like under 14s, under 15s. And I remember I tried to do five keepy-ups and I couldn't, right? Couldn't do it. And that was it. From that day, I quit being a goalkeeper and I was like, I'm going to be a footballer. From 14 to 14, 15, 16, I went to college at 16 and I was in the college football team, which was semi-pro. And I nearly got scouted for Ross County. And that was just by pure determination of people telling us that I couldn't do something. So it's the same with the boxing. Someone tells me I can't do it. Like people say, you'll never get the Jake Paul fight. You'll never get the Tommy fight. But everything I've set out to do in everything in my career, in my scaffolding, I wanted to be on the oil rigs. I wanted to do this. I wanted to do this on Jolie Shore. Everything I've set out to do, I've done it through pure determination just to prove people wrong and to prove myself right. And even more so now, I've got two young boys to look up to us. So I would like them to go down the route of sports, football, whichever sport they choose, football, boxing, rugby, whichever sport, anything, dancing, I don't care. But I want them to be heavily involved in sport. And what better to look up to the dad and say, oh, well, my dad was a pro boxer. He had 10 fights, or he had 8 fights. Do you know what I mean? So there's more determination than ever. But the main thing is people telling us that I can't do it.
When do you think we'll see you... you're not revealing who you've signed with at the moment. Obviously, as you say, Adam's training, Adam Booth, David Hay, George Groves, all these other guys. He's worked with so many.
The other week, we commented on one of his stories and he replied. And I was just saying, oh, I've switched over to pro boxing. And he was like, oh, yeah, amazing move. You'll do really well. I always thought that since the Bama days, because obviously he called a few of the fights. I told him who I was with and stuff. And he was like, can't wait to watch it. So yeah, I can't say who I'm signing with yet, but it's gonna be a big announcement, and I'm very confident. I think they're looking at the end of January, end of Jan, and then I think we've got a biggest show to be on in the first week of March.
Now keep your ears open this week, because it's highly likely that the WBC are going to mandate Tyson Fury versus Dillian White. We got stuck into it on our show, talking to the likes of Andy Lee, who is Tyson Fury's trainer or part of that training team, and we also spoke to Javier Miller, who is Dillian White's head coach. Both men joined us to discuss the possibilities of a super fight happening in Britain.
His resume speaks for itself. He just seems to get better and better every fight. And, you know, his lack of amateur experience, he's making up for that by fighting good opponents. And I had respect for Dillian before I got involved with Dillian. Once I got involved with Dillian, you know, I did speak to him about changing certain things here and there. And, you know, he's done everything that I've asked him to do. I told him it would make him a better fighter. You know, especially when these big, big fights are coming now, you know, his dream is to be a world champion. I really want that for him. But, you know, honestly, he's just Dillian can do a bit of everything. And I think all these other heavyweights know that he's a real danger. And we'll see what happens next.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight. The thing is this for me. It's an obvious question. It's a simple question. We know Dillian is a warrior. Warrior hearts. I had an amazing interview with him recently for DAZN out in Portugal, Xavier. And he outlined in that, because of what he's been through in his life, and this is what's so inspirational about Dillian, he can face a defeat, he can face a knockout to your Povetkins, and the next day he's absolutely fine again because of what he's been through in life. Like, boxing is not a problem. When he looks back on the way his life's been, he is testament to survival as a human being. But the big question for me is, if this fight does get made against Tyson Fury, in my view, he's up against the number one in the world. How do you beat Tyson Fury if you're Dillian White?
I think Dillian should do exactly what he's always been doing. You know, Dillian's got a lot of skills, which a lot of people haven't even seen yet. You know, he's got a fantastic jab. His body punching is the best in the division. You know, his counter punching, to me, is the best in the division. There's a lot of things that Dillian could do really well. I rate Tyson, very good boxer. You know, he's become a little bit more aggressive now. And obviously, there's this talk now that he's become this puncher. He's not. He's just a very good boxer, and he found a very good dance partner. But he's beating Klitschko, he's beating Wilder. You have to give him that respect. And at the moment, because of the position he holds, you have to say he's number one. But Dillian is right there, and he's ready to go. And he's done everything a fighter should do to get ready for an opportunity like this. And hopefully, WBC do the right thing, and we get the chance to showcase all the skills that he has.
But do you think he out-jabs Tyson Fury then?
Well, Dillian can jab with anybody. A lot of the guys that Tyson Fury's box don't have a jab as good as Dillian White's. You know, like I said, I don't want to discredit any fighter because I love boxing. I don't like to do that. I just know what I've got. And Dillian can beat any of these guys, any of them. You know, he's got a very, very strong team around him. And remember, Dillian's very hungry. I mean, you know, he hasn't had what the others have had yet. He hasn't had a chance to fight for a world title or win a world title. A very hungry fighter, a very dangerous fighter. So, yeah, of course, I'm extremely confident. That's the fight that I want.
Xavier, as well as obviously getting Dillian in the right technical place for a fight like this with Tyson Fury, is probably even more important the mental side of this, because a fight with Tyson Fury, it's about keeping that cool head in there. There's going to be moments in there where Tyson's going to have success. That's just the way certain fights go at the very, very elite level. It's about staying calm, staying patient, because a moment will arise where Dillian can do what Dillian does best.
Yeah, and with Dillian, you know, we all know, I don't have to tell you guys this, he's a very, you know, strong-minded individual. At those moments in the fight where Dillian needs to do something else, he doesn't need anyone to tell him to do that. You know, a lot of the times I choose to train fighters for me with, you know, the grit and the heart and determination, the skill I can teach. I've been teaching boxing for over 20 years, spent years in the amateurs. But for me, it's always about the character of the fighter. Yeah. Dillian's got that in abundance. You know, the guy is just ready to go. You know, and no one at this moment in time who hasn't boxed for a world title is more ready than Dillian.
No, I agree. He's a very dangerous opponent. I think it's a fantastic fight. I think he's a very dangerous opponent for Tyson Fury, and Dillian always poses those threats. What do you think is... What do you feel from your perspective, from the team's perspective? We were talking about it before you came on air. Where does this fight take place if it's March? Does it go to Cardiff? Is it big enough to be in the Millennium Stadium? Does it go to the O2 Arena? Would you be prepared to go? Should we all be going to Las Vegas for this fight and make it a great occasion there? Where should it go in your view?
I think this is an opportunity for us to have a massive fight in the UK. You know, this will sell out any arena to me. Cardiff, great suggestion. You know, we need an arena that's big enough for this kind of fight. This fight's massive. You know, We want to do this in the UK. You know, we didn't get, you know, the Joshua and the Fury fight in the UK. You know, there was talks of one of the fighters always wanted to fight in America, which is usually Tyson Fury. I know the demographic is massive over there. I understand that. but we've got a chance to do something really big in the UK and make history. And that's really what we want to do. I don't blame Dillian for wanting to have the fight in the UK, but believe me, we will go where necessary to go and get that shot.
There you have it, action-packed as ever. Never miss out on any of our Fight Sports content by subscribing via the iTunes or via the TalkSport website, TalkSport.com. Get yourself stuck in if you need an Android feed. Next week, we are live from Wembley, so come and join us for the fights, and we'll also bring you a podcast too. We'll catch you next time.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.